Welcome to the deep dive. We take your sources, pull out the key insights, and basically give you the shortcut to getting up to speed.
And today we're diving into something really essential for anyone handling pesticides. Understanding the laws, the regulations, and crucially, the labels.
Yeah, this one's for you. We know this stuff can seem, well, pretty complex, so we're trying to cut through that noise and get to what really matters.
Exactly. Our goal here is to unpack these rules so you see not just what they are, but, you know, why they're in place, how they all fit together for safety.
And this is where it gets critical, I think. We're talking about documents, about rules that have the full force of law behind them. This isn't just like friendly advice.
No, not at all. It's legally binding. And the sources point out that before any pesticide can even be sold or used in California, it has to be registered, both by the EPA, the federal agency, and by California's DPR.
So a double layer of approval.
Right. It's designed for protection, for people, for the environment.
And a huge piece of that protection framework, maybe the cornerstone, is the label itself, isn't it? The sources hammer this home. The label is the law.
Absolutely. It's the primary legal document. It tells you exactly how you can, and maybe more importantly, how you cannot use that product.
And manufacturers have to make sure those labels meet all the federal and state rules.
They do. And sometimes, you know, there's so much information required, the full labeling might not just be the sticker on the bottle. It could be a booklet, a leaflet that comes with it.
Ah, okay. So separate documents still count as part of the legally binding label.
Yes, exactly. They're all part of it.
Okay, so the label is the law. That's clear. But when should someone actually be looking at this label? The materials give us a kind of timeline, right?
They do, yeah. It breaks it down. So before you even buy the product, first check.
What are you looking for then?
Well, is it actually registered for the pest you have? And for the specific place you want to treat the crop, the area, are there weather restrictions? What PPE or protective equipment will you need?
Right, so you don't waste money or buy something you just can't use safely.
Precisely. Then, okay, before you mix and apply, that's the next critical point.
This is where you find the how-to instructions.
Exactly. How to mix it correctly, the application rates, all the safety precautions for yourself, for others, for, you know, beneficial insects or wildlife, and the first aid info, just in case.
Okay, makes sense. What about after the application?
Still need the label.
No.
When you're storing it, how to do that safely? Are there fire hazards? And then before disposing of leftovers or the empty container, the label tells you how to prevent contamination.
And it often points you to local rules too, right? Like the county commissioner.
Yes, often it will. It's really a document you need throughout the product's entire life cycle.
Okay, that covers the when. Let's dig into what information is actually packed onto these labels. Beyond the brand name, what are the key sections?
A really important one is the statement of use classification. Is it general use or restricted use?
And restricted means higher risk.
Generally, yes. It signals higher potential hazard, so it needs special permits, special handling. You'll see a prominent statement if it's restricted use. And California has its own list of restricted materials, too, which might add things not on the federal list.
Okay. And is agricultural use only the same as restricted?
No, good point. That's a different thing. It just limits where it can be used, not necessarily its hazard classification in the same way as restricted use.
Got it. Then there's the ingredients list.
Yeah.
Active ingredients percentages.
Right. And the sources mention that even the other ingredients, the inert ones, can sometimes have hazards, so you can't just ignore them.
Good to know. You also get the chemical names, which can look pretty complicated.
They can. That's why they often include a common name or a CAS number too. It helps identify it, especially for safety or medical reasons.
You'll also see the formulation type, like liquid, powder, granule.
Which affects handling and application, yeah. And the EPA registration number, that's your proof it's federally approved. Plus, an establishment number for the manufacturing site. California numbers, too, if applicable.
Lots of identifying codes. But what about immediate safety info? The signal word seems key.
Oh, definitely. The signal word is highlighted in the sources. It's your quick look at acute toxicity.
Like danger poison with the skull and crossbones.
It's the highest toxicity, yes. Then danger alone for serious hazards, warning for moderate, and caution for low toxicity. It's like a quick vital risk flag.
A shorthand guide. What else?
Manufacturer's name and address useful for questions or emergencies. And a detailed first aid section. What to do immediately for skin, eyes, inhalation, ingestion, and when to get medical help.
Crucial. And then the precautionary statements.
Yes, these get into the specifics. Risks to people, pets, symptoms of exposure, and really importantly, the required PPE, what you absolutely must wear.
So it spells out the gloves, respirator, whatever is needed.
Exactly. And environmental hazards too. Risks to bees, fish, how to avoid contaminating water, plus physical or chemical hazards, like if it's flammable.
Okay, now the core instructions are in the directions for use section.
That's the heart of it, really. It tells you exactly what pests it controls, on what specific sites, crops, buildings, whatever the application methods allowed, any restrictions like how long you have to wait before harvest, or if it affects planting other crops later.
It specifies how much to use, how to apply it, and when. That when includes things like the harvest interval.
Yes, the minimum time between the last spray and harvest.
Yeah.
And the material really stresses this. Not following these directions is breaking the law, period. Unless there's a very specific federal or state exception, you follow the label.
Got it. They also mention a misuse statement.
Just a quick reinforcement that you have to follow the label. And for ag uses, there's often an agricultural use requirements section.
Ah, this links to the Worker Protection Standard, the WPS.
Correct. It gives WPS specific info, like what PPE workers need if they have to enter a treated area early, and the REI, the restricted entry interval.
The REI. That's the waiting period before going back into a treated field without protection.
Exactly. It's a crucial safety window. And importantly, California regulations might actually require a longer REI than what's on the federal label.
So you always have to check the California rules, too.
Absolutely. Your county ag commissioner is the resource there. California can be stricter.
Okay. And finally, on the label, storage and disposal directions.
Yep. Essential for preventing accidents and contamination. And often a warranty section, but the core legal stuff is the directions and precautions.
So that's the label, dense, legal, critical. But the sources also bring up the safety data sheet, the SDS, formerly MSDS.
Right. If the label is the law for how to use it, the SDS is like the deep dive into the chemicals, properties, and hazards.
So more detail than the label.
Often, yes. The label tells you what to do for safety. The SDS often explains why, giving more background on toxicology, physical hazards, chemical characteristics, emergency response details.
And employers need to have these available.
Yes. Readily available to employees, clearly marked, accessible place. You usually get them from the employer, manufacturer, or supplier.
And it's a standard format now, 16 sections.
Globally standardized, yes, thanks to OSHA. It covers identification, hazard details, composition, the exact percentages, much more detailed first aid than the label often has.
Firefighting info, what to do if there's a spill?
Accidental release measures, yeah. Handling and storage again, but often more in depth. And a key section, exposure controls personal protection. This gives exposure limits, specifies PPE types in detail.
And physical chemical properties, stability, reactivity.
Uh-huh. And a big one, toxicological information. This is where you find data on chronic effects, not just acute. Routes of exposure, those LD50, LC50 numbers.
Lower numbers mean more toxic, right?
Generally, yes. And info on whether it's a potential carcinogen.
There are also sections like ecological info, disposal, transport, regulatory.
Right. Some of those aren't strictly mandatory under OSHA's standard, but they're often included and really valuable. Like Prop 65 warnings for California would be in regulatory information. And the last section is just other information, maybe revision dates.
So the key takeaway is SDS complements the label, doesn't replace it, gives you the why behind the what.
Precisely. You need both. And then beyond these documents, the material gets into specific regulations, especially for using restricted materials, even on your own land.
Right. That seemed interesting. Even if it's my property, extra rules apply for restricted stuff.
Absolutely. The higher potential risk means state and federal rules apply regardless of ownership. You need certification and you have to get a permit.
A permit from who?
From your local county agricultural commissioner. Before you apply the restricted material.
Okay. What does that permit process involve? What do they need to know?
You apply. Detailing the areas you want to treat, location, size, the crop or commodity, the specific pest problem, which restricted materials you plan to use, how you'll apply them. You also have to show you've considered alternatives.
Seems thorough. What about multiple sites in one county?
Usually okay on one permit, but you list and describe each one. You also need a map or description showing what's nearby sensitive sites like schools, homes, rivers, habitats, other crops.
So they assess the potential impact on the surroundings.
Exactly. The commissioner might even add specific local conditions to your permit. It's about careful planning for the community and environment.
Okay, got the permit, plans approved. What about employees? There are notification requirements.
Yes, very important for worker safety. If employees will be working within a quarter mile of a treated area with certain pesticides, including restricted ones, you must notify them beforehand.
Notify them about what?
About the application timing, the location, the pesticide name, the REI, and any precautions they need to take.
How is that notification done? Signs, talking to them.
The label might specify. If not, you might choose. But California has specific posting rules that can go beyond the label. Field posting is required if the REI is over 38 hours. For things like hoop houses, posting is needed if the REI is over 4 hours.
And greenhouses?
Always required for fully enclosed structures like greenhouses, no matter the REI length.
Okay.
So you need to know the label and the California specifics. The PSIS leaflets are good resources for this.
Ah, the Pesticide Safety Information Series. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So posting might be mandatory depending on the situation and REI.
Yeah.
And you also have to display application info and the SDS.
Correct. Specifics about that application date, time, product, plus the SDS must be posted centrally where employees can see it.
From along.
For 30 days plus the full REI. After that, you keep the records, application details, label, SDS, and make them available if an employee asks.
Okay. And the last piece seems to be use reporting.
Yes. For all agricultural pesticide applications, not just restricted ones, you have to submit a pesticide use report, a PUR.
To the county commissioner again.
Yes, monthly. By the 10th of the following month, they tell you exactly what data they need, and they send it on to the state DPR for tracking.
Okay, let's try to wrap this up. We've covered quite a bit. The label is legally binding the law. That's fundamental.
Mm-hmm. And it's packed with information, from those quick signal words and PPE needs to detailed directions and the crucial REI.
Then there's the SDS, the safety data sheet, which is the essential partner document, giving that deeper scientific background and hazard detail.
Right. It explains the why behind the label's safety instructions.
And we looked at those extra layers, especially for restricted materials needing that permit from the county ag commissioner, even on your own land.
And the rules around notifying employees about applications and REIs, plus the requirement for monthly use reporting for all ag applications.
So understanding all these interconnected pieces, the label directions, the SDS details, state regulations, permits, it's all absolutely critical for using pesticides safely and legally.
Couldn't agree more. It's a whole system working together.
Which brings us to a final thought for you, the listener. We've seen that the responsibility for reading, understanding, and following all of this, the label, the SDS, the regulations, the permit conditions, ultimately falls on the user. So thinking about your own operation, what do you see as the biggest practical challenges in making sure everyone who handles pesticides truly gets this essential, multi-layered information? Something to consider.